Hello, Packers fans. Welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined by Ryan Wood, here to wrap up the first 2 weeks of OTAs. Ryan, as we were kind of joking before we got started, there's a lot to talk about, but at the same time, there's not a lot to talk about. There's a lot of guys. Yeah. But they're still in shorts. There's no pads on. They're not hitting. And so it's sort of a weird time, but of course, still a lot of new faces in the Packers locker room.
OTAs for me are always about who's getting the reps. What's the early shakeout of the depth chart? And it can change. I mean, there's a long way to go to training camp, but this is the first kind of look at the blueprint of how Matt LaFleur, Joe Barry envision their ideal 11 falling. And from there, it's up to guys to win jobs. And that doesn't really start, one, how well do you know the playbook? But that's kind of a base level for everyone. Two, when they get the pads on, a couple days in their training camp, that's when it will ratchet to another level. Because this isn't football yet. And I say it every year, Cassidy, and you know it. It's not football until they put the pads on. This is guys running around in shorts and in jerseys. This is classroom work on the field.
It's not football, just might hit somebody. I think you were standing there yesterday when we were talking to Samori Toure about the weight he's put on. And he said, you know, I feel better out there. And he said, but I'm not going to really know. And he kind of stopped. And I said, till somebody hits you. And he said, yeah. And I said, do you want to run out here and let Wes hit you real quick? Our good friend Wes, who knows, with Packers.com. Samori did not take us up on that offer, but out of respect for Wes, because he would hurt him.
Yeah, that was a wise choice.
Exactly. That being said, Ryan, you have kids, so you know this. Whenever you introduce a new kid into the group, like a new baby, that older kid who might still be young looks infinitely older all of a sudden. So the weird metaphor I'm getting to here is Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, Samori Toure, they look like the veterans now in that wide receiver group.
They are the veterans. It's crazy to think about, isn't it? Not a single one of these receivers, they have, 10 on the roster, was in the NFL at the start of last year. They're all new. And it's just – but, yeah, Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs are the veterans by lack of other options. And they played a lot last year. Samori Toure is, you know, going to get a chance. And I think he's going to be the most fascinating to watch because I still don't understand what happened to him last year. I mean, he flashes in Buffalo. He flashes in Detroit back-to-back. And then he completely disappears. Right. There's talent there. We saw it. Can it become consistent? That's the question with him. It's a big offseason for him. The receiver that's really stood out to me is Romeo Doubs. And who knows? It's not pads. But if you remember, I asked Matt LaFleur about this, Romeo Doubs was a stud at the start of training camp, all through training camp last year. Had a really solid – I mean, he's a player. The guy can play. Had a solid start to his rookie year, was earning Aaron Rodgers' trust, and then had, you know, depending on your perception of it, either a dirty hit or an unfortunate hit in Detroit, got rolled up on, just missled by the safety, high ankle sprain, not only missed four games, but by Adam Stinovich and Matt LaFleur's own admission, wasn't really the same when he came back down the stretch. Matt LaFleur said that he's picked up where he left off when healthy. And that's big because it's got to be more than Christian Watson in this receiver room. And Romeo Doubs certainly looks like he's a guy that's going to be a factor.
It was almost like after that injury, he didn't trust himself.
I think he never quite got back to his full speed, which can happen with high ankle sprains late in the season. You know, he just seemed a step slower when he got back.
Speaking of speed, as you said, this is a wide receiver unit that's going to be looking for a lot of young influx of talent. Jaden Reed is so fast. And that is something you can tell during OTAs. He flies down the field, Ryan. I swear you can hear him whistle when he comes by. I mean, is that something that can translate into a rookie's game right away, or do they have to get used to the speed of the game?
He looks good in shorts, no question. And there's a reason the two guys, the two rookies on the offensive side that look like they're definitely going to get early playing time is Jaden Reed and Luke Musgrave. Not a surprise. They're the two second round picks, drafted 8 picks apart. But they're getting a lot of first team reps. It's very easy to see Jaden Reed just sliding into that slot position at receiver and filling out their 11 personnel with Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson on the perimeter and then Jaden Reed inside. The big challenge for him, the thing that's going to be interesting to watch out for, is when they put the pads on, now you're getting jammed at the line of scrimmage. Right. The physicality of the game is completely different. It's one thing to be fast in shorts, and he is, but is your play speed when you're getting jammed, when it's physical, does your play speed stay where it is or does it dip down? And that's going to be the hurdle for him to get over once they put the pads on.
You know what I would love to see? Do you remember last year during training camp when Romeo Doubs was blowing up and everybody was talking about him, his name was on everybody's lips, and Jair Alexander finally walked into practice one day and said, let me have him. Line me up from him. I want him all day. Mm-hmm. And it taught him some lessons, which you need to have. You'd rather have it in training camp than in a game. And I don't know if you remember, Ryan, but it shaped Romeo's confidence that day. And after practice that day, we saw Jair in the locker room go over to Romeo and spend a lot of time with him. And then we saw Romeo bounce back the next day, be the training camp early season darling that he was. All of that to say, I want to see Jaden Reed against Jair. That's usually your best baptism by fire moment as a rookie.
You know what I'm interested in see? Who's going to do that with Luke Musgrave?
Yeah.
Because he's a monster. He's just huge. Matt LaFleur was asked, Luke Musgrave looks different than guys you've had in that position in the past. He interrupts the question. He goes, he is different. And, you know, as Matt LaFleur said, he's got an elite trait in that he can flat fly, but he's huge too. If OTAs are about the eyeball test and just, you know, first time to the size up, the size, weight, speed, height, all that, Luke Musgrave passes that in droves. When they get pads on, again, the same for everyone, especially rookies, but who in that safety room that they have can match up with the physical traits of Luke Musgrave? That's going to be fascinating to see. I don't know. I mean, when is he going to get that baptism by fire? Jaire Alexander can hand it out for sure to any receiver. Even Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, in their second year, I mean, he can hand it out to anyone. But for Luke Musgrave, who sure looks like he's going to be tight end one sooner than later, that'll be interesting to watch.
Let me ask you a couple of hypotheticals here with the tight end room before we move on. We also have Tucker Kraft there, third rounder, who could get a lot of playing time as well. You have Tyler Davis still in there, Josiah DeGuara. LaFleur mentioned something last week, and this is my fault. I'm sorry, listeners, for not looking it up ahead of time. I didn't think we'd get into this subject. But he said something about the way they can use the tight end room now that indicated to me that Josiah DeGuara would be a full-time fullback, which they used him as times in the past year or two. Could you see a situation where you have Luke Musgraves as tight end one, you use Tucker Kraft and then Tyler Davis as a supplement, and you use Josiah DeGuara more almost like Kyle Juszczyk is used by the 49ers?
Well, that was the entire plan when they drafted Josiah DeGuara in the third round. And that's the role he's carved out for himself, is to be – it's a niche role, but kind of be an H-back type in the backfield. And he had that role last year. He had about a quarter of the snaps, 20 to 25% right. snaps last year. Most of them were in the backfield. And when you saw Josiah DeGuara at his best, he was in the backfield as a lead blocker. That's his best trait that he brings to the offense. It'd probably be a niche package, a sub package, but for sure, Matt LaFleur is very multiple. We know that with a young quarterback, their running game is going to be their bread and butter. Having more tight ends on the field, having a lead blocker in the backfield profiles well for this offense. The thing that stood out to me is I think it was Adam Stinovich that was going down the list of who are the leaders now on the offensive side, and he included Josiah DeGuara. Josiah DeGuara is by de facto a leader of that tight end room. And it seems from listening to the coaches that he's taken on that role well. I think his place on this roster is secure because of what he brings to the offense, because he is the old head now in the tight end room, and you use that term loosely because he's still under his rookie contract. But he's going to be an important piece for them, even if he only gets a quarter of the snaps.
Yeah. As you said, he could be used a lot in that backfield. He would be leading the way for Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. A.J. Dillon came into OTAs with a very specific set of things he's wanted to work on. He's one of those that it's going to be hard to tell what difference it's made until the pads come on, just because of what he brings to the game. But how important is that? Let me back up. A.J. Dillon this offseason has made it clear he wants to work on not getting brought down low. And when you have someone who has his center of gravity, that shouldn't be how you're getting brought down most of the time. All of that to say, when do you feel like you could start seeing maybe a difference in A.J. Dillon's game? Would that need to be training camp as well?
Yeah, training camp. But really, even still, with running backs, it's not till they're live tackled. You know, it's for running backs, it's all don't get on the ground. Don't let the defender take you to the ground. And they don't really do a lot of taking to the ground in training camp, even with the pads on. So I would say during the season, but that's going to be important to watch because A.J. Dillon did not have the season last year that A.J. Dillon would want to have. And the coaches, I haven't talked to A.J. Dillon this offseason yet, but the coaches have made that clear. And it's because A.J. Dillon is capable of so much more than what he put forth last year. He has a lot of talent. He's a very high potential guy. And the Packers are going to need A.J. Dillon to reach that potential, to be a 1B to Aaron Jones 1A, because that's the backbone of their offense. It's Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. And if he's less of a second running back and more of a kind of a co-star in that backfield, that gives a huge boost to this offense. So I don't think we'll really know until they can get tackled, because that's just the nature of the running back position. But it's on their radar. I mean, they know that there's more room to grow there, and that it's because he's capable of doing it.
There are still two units on the offense we haven't talked about yet, and they are the ones that people want to know about the most. So let's start with the offensive line. The left side of that line feels pretty set with David Bakhtiari and Elgton Jenkins. They've said that. They both said they feel better. Coaches have said that. The right side of that line and center, it feels wide open. Are you starting to see more and more of a consistency in those snaps? Because I feel like last week, who we saw like as the starting five when practice started versus who we saw as the starting five when they go into teams was still different. When do you start to see maybe consistency there? Or do you want to see coaches use OTAs to continue to cross-train, use guys in different positions in those three spots just to kind of get a feel for who can do what, train them all in different spots?
I think they're using OTAs right now to kind of get an initial eval, a kind of a look-see on what they have there. Minicamp will be interesting, but really I think that's going to go into training camp on the right side of the offensive line. Who we haven't seen as the starting right tackle in the two open OTA sessions is who all of us kind of slotted in as the likely starting right tackle to start the season, which is Josh Nyman. He was the starting left tackle in the first open OTA sessions when David Bakhtiari and Elgton Jenkins weren't there. And then he was on the backup line, and Zach Tom was the starting right tackle this previous week. It's going to be a revolving door competition between Josh Nyman and Zach Tom at right tackle all the way through until it gets settled, probably early in training camp, if it goes according to the Packers' preferred timeline. I don't know who wins that job. It's going to be fast. It's going to be one of the more fascinating position battles to watch. But they have options there. And if Josh Nyman's not the starting right tackle, there's still a lot of value there because he's one of the best backup left tackles in the league. There's not a lot of third tackles that can play the left side and lock down the blind side the way Josh Nyman can. So he's a commodity on this roster. It's just, where does he fall? Does he win that position battle against Zach Tom? You know, right guard is solidified with John Runyon. Y'all know what the left side is. And Josh Byers, it sure looks like he's going to get every opportunity to just keep his job. He's got to play better than last year, but as Luke Buck has said, the offensive line coach, he believes in Josh Myers. He's going to be here a long time. The Packers drafted him in the second round for a reason. They're going to give him patience, and it's going to be his job.
Do you think that was their way of sort of maybe lighting a fire under him by openly stating that center was open for business?
You know, it's interesting because behind Josh Myers, Sean Ryan is getting really a test drive at center, and that's really Sean Ryan's ticket to winning a roster spot, is if he can play center, if he can give depth there. Because, you know, Zach Tom can do it, but when you have a guy that can play either tackle spot, you don't want to be at center. You'd like him to play the more premium position at tackle. And I think that's the preference for the Packers, to have Zach Tom to maximize his impact beyond the perimeter of the offensive line. Can Sean Ryan be a backup center? I mean, that's going to be interesting. But it's the emphasis is backup. I mean, it's going to be Josh Myers' job unless something goes completely amiss. It's going to be him in the center of that offensive line.
Well, we do know who he'll be snapping it to, whoever is at center. It'll be going Jordan Love. Ryan, somebody asked me yesterday, what does the feel like in the locker room through OTAs without Rodgers there? I said, well, you know, it's hard to tell yet because we've only been there twice. I said, and he wouldn't normally be here for this part anyways. The only part that's weird is walking in and seeing someone else in his locker. That still throws me off a little bit. That being said, this is very clearly Jordan Love's team now. Again, it's two practices. Like, so take this with a grain of salt. But it feels like we've seen Jordan Love have some ups, have some downs. I think what has stood out to me is that he hasn't gotten flustered when he's had the bad moments, which can always be the case with a young quarterback, which I think goes into the fact that he's been here already for several years. Just initial impressions out of the first two practices, what have you seen from Jordan Love?
Yeah, what did you say about the, you know, when you bring a rookie in, the guys who have been there just seem like they're bigger, older overnight.
Yeah.
And it's not that same situation. I mean, they did bring a rookie in Sean Clifford. And that's, by the way, the weirdest part of someone else being in Aaron Rodgers' locker is literally the first locker you see when you walk in. That was Aaron Rodgers' locker. And so you're just used to, as soon as you walk through those doors, there's Aaron Rodgers. It doesn't, you don't have to look for him. He's right there. Now it's Sean Clifford. That's a jarring change. But with Jordan Love, it's the omission, the absence of Aaron Rodgers. He just looks like he got so much older overnight. Yeah. Now he's in QB1 role. I mean, it's him. And you can detect some confidence in that role, but what's that saying? Everyone's confident. What did Mike Tyson say? I think everyone's confident until you get knocked in the mouth and then you find out. And we haven't found out yet. That's going to be the real test for him, is once he's going against a defensive coordinator, whether it's Steve Spagnuolo in 2021, his first NFL start, or the Chicago Bears week 1, and they're bringing the house and plays break down and he's holding the ball and he's got to make something happen with it. How does he respond in that moment? That will be the real test. But until then, he's handled everything as well as he could. He won his introductory press conference as the starting quarterback, which means about that much, very, very little. But in OTAs, I think one of the things that I've noticed is that he's willing to take his checkdowns. He's not forcing the ball down the field a whole lot, which is pretty in tune with what Matt LaFleur and, you know, Matt LaFleur runs the Kyle Shanahan offense. It's kind of dinking and dunking and taking what's there and not forcing things. And Jordan Love seems to fit that role schematically. He was really good in the 2-minute drill this previous week, 7 of 10. And one of the incompletions was a spike to kill the clock, move the offense down the field. They were at the 16 yard line with 8 seconds left. They had a chance to either kick a chip shot field goal or take a shot to the end zone. Now they didn't have Jair Alexander, Rasul Douglas, or Keyshawn Nixon to deal with because none of the top three corners were available during the last OTA. But even so, and the other thing that stood out, him and Romeo Doubs during that 2-minute drill, I think Romeo Doubs had like 4 catches for 42 yards. He was looking regularly for Romeo Doubs. Romeo Doubs was delivering. I talked with Romeo Doubs afterward, and he said, I walked up to his locker, just me and him, and it's like, you and 10 already look like you're in midseason form. He's like, I made a decision. No matter what happens, I'm going to be there for him. And yeah. And that, he's taking that very personal. I think him, Christian Watson, the two veterans at receiver, they know that, you know, even though they're younger in NFL years than Jordan Love, they're older in experience, and they take it personal. They're going to barricade him as best they can with support. So their chemistry looks like it's good. You know, the first OTA, Cassidy, his Jordan Love's best throw of the entire session was back in the end zone and red zone period to Christian Watson. Romeo Doubs had a touchdown in red zone too. Those are the two guys he's going to be looking for, and I think from here you'll start to see that chemistry grow.
Let's flip to the defensive side of it now. As you said, that there's not live hits coming for Jordan Love, but he can still feel some pressure. There's going to be a lot of focus on Lucas Van Ness, understandably so. You know who has stood out to me even more than Van Ness? And this is not a knock on Van Ness. He's two OTA practice – or 2 weeks of OTAs in. But Kingsley and Igbari, or JJ, he is constantly pushing past that line. And he seems to have added like a jab move to his repertoire that could be deadly in a live game. That being said, with Rashawn Gary still recovering, who all is going to have to step up in this pass rushing unit?
Yeah, Kingsley and Igbari, you know, Justin Hollins is a guy that's getting first team reps with Rashawn Gary being out, and he got first team reps aside Preston Smith when Preston Smith was at the second open OTA. And then Lucas Van Ness is going to get an opportunity. He had a really good move. And with, you know, what we say about pads, but especially true in the trenches. Running back in the trenches, that's where you got to really see the pads. But Lucas Van Ness, from an agility standpoint, and for it to flash in 11-on-11, you know, he had an outside speed rush that he ducked inside Josh Nyman, would have had a clear sack. I think it was on Danny Etling. But he's a massive guy that moves really well. There's some similarities there to Rashawn Gary. I don't know that he's quite as explosive as Rashawn Gary was as a rookie, because nobody is as explosive as Rashawn Gary was as a rookie. It's not a knock on Lucas Van Ness. Rashawn Gary's just a different dude. But there's some similarities from a height, weight, speed combination. His testing numbers are very similar. You've seen that in shorts. For him, it's going to be, once the pads are on, being able to take the physicality of another 300-pound tackle trying to do everything they can to keep you from getting off the line of scrimmage. That's going to be the first test for him.
We have seen, again, this is the name of the game, more youth on the inside of that defensive line as well. I mean, T.J. Slayton, Devontae Wyatt, next to Kenny Clark, those two guys are going to be asked to do a lot this season, it feels like.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a lot on Kenny Clark. Stop me if you heard this before, right? I mean, it seems like every year it's a lot on Kenny Clark. Devontae Wyatt is the wild card that they need to really elevate into a true starting defensive lineman. But so much, you know, Devontae Wyatt had three quarters of the year last year, because there was Jerron Reed, there was Dean Lowry. He had almost his entire rookie season to be able to develop. The Packers could be patient with him. I don't know that they have that same latitude with the you know, Carl Brooks and Colby Wooden coming in as rookies, just because you got your top three on the defensive line, Kenny Clark, Devontae Wyatt, T.J. Slayton, but Colby Wooden's four, Carl Brooks is five. Like that's if you want any kind of rotation there, even if you're in predominantly sub-package nickel and you have two down linemen in the middle of the defense. If you want any rotation there, the rookies are going to get snaps early. So their development, even though they're a fourth and sixth round pick, their development's almost more accelerated than Devontae Wyatt as a first rounder, because they just don't have the depth to have any other choice. I mean, they need these guys to come along. Not that they're going to be playing a ton of snaps, but they're going to be playing some snaps.
Mm-hmm. And something else that I think is interesting that we should keep in mind, And admittedly, I don't know if we've seen a lot of this through OTAs. The first OTA, I was watching a lot of Jordan Love. This week, my plane got in late. As Ryan knows, I got there right as practice ended. Thanks for my plane getting delayed there, Delta. All that being said, I don't know how much we've seen of this yet, but from what the coaches have said, we could see Lucas Van Ness all over that front seven. We could see him on the edge. We could see him in the interior. We could see him as an outside linebacker. And so he's a chess piece that they can move around to a lot of these different pieces, correct?
Yeah, there's no question they see him that way. We've seen him predominantly on the edge through the first two OTAs, which isn't a surprise because that's what's going to be more new for him. He didn't stand up a whole lot at Iowa. He was, whether he was at a five-tech defensive end or inside, he had his hand on the ground in a three-point stance. So that's the transition to that's what they're focusing on right now. But just because that's where we've seen him, again, that's the new part. The part that's not new for Lucas Van Ness is dropping inside. He did that a lot, and he's going to do that in the NFL. As soon as he got drafted, Brian Gutekunst likened him to Za'Darius Smith. And schematically, if you remember how they used Za'Darius Smith, he was everywhere. He rushed from the interior a ton. Jason Rebrovich, the outside linebackers coach, he kind of let slip that he could see some three outside linebacker packages where you got Lucas Van Ness inside. Once Rashawn Gary comes back, you got Lucas Van Ness inside, you got Gary and Preston Smith on the outside, which is something that they did when they had Za'Darius Smith. They had him inside, and they had Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary on the edges. When you are able to put three of those guys, three fast twitch athletes at, you know, true edge rushers on the field together, that is a really good benefit for any defense. And so when do they get Rashawn Gary back, which we don't know. He's been a rehab group this entire spring. When they get Lucas Van Ness caught up to speed and they have him comfortable, because just because you're throwing a lot as a rookie doesn't mean he's comfortable with it all yet. We saw that with Christian Watson last year. You know, they threw the kitchen sink at him early. He was swimming through that stuff early in the season. He had the injuries as well, but there was a lot going on in his head. And once the game slowed down for him, he got comfortable with it. You saw Christian Watson take off. Be the same way with Lucas Van Ness. He's going to have to swim through all the stuff they're throwing at him. But once they're able to get him comfortable as a rookie, once they have Rashawn Gary back, I think you see a lot of three outside linebacker package.
Will be exciting to watch for sure. Looking at the corners, there's not a ton to talk about there, so we don't have to spend a ton of time on it, because Jair Alexander and Russell Douglas have not been here through OTA so far. And frankly, they've got those spots locked up. The wild card there is, how soon does Eric Stokes return? How soon is his recovery? How soon does he recover from an injury that was much, much worse than we knew at the time? He said he had the Liz Frank injury is really what kind of threw things off with his timeline, the break in the foot. And when he does come back, Ryan, just give me a quick synopsis. Where is his position? Like, what does he do? Because it feels like they've had Rasul Douglas come in and sort of lock up that other corner outside position now that they have Keyshawn Nixon, who they can trust at nickel.
That's the biggest thing, is that they seem intent on going forward with Keyshawn Nixon as the slot corner, which means that you're not going to see Jair Alexander or Rasul Douglas need to drop inside. They don't need to drop inside. They just keep them on the perimeter where the Packers feel like they're best. The perimeter is where Eric Stokes lines up. So he's going to have to earn everything he gets. He's going to – now, the caveat to this, injuries are always part of the game. You don't know. I mean, Jair Alexander, you hope not, but Jair Alexander could try to tackle Najee Harris in week four. It won't be Najee Harris's time, and he's got a shoulder. He's out until the playoffs. So you never know how injuries are going to factor.
Isn't that how Eric Stokes was out on the field so much as a rookie?
No, he was earlier than that. He was week two as a rookie. He didn't play much in the opener that year against the Saints. He didn't start that year. I believe, if I remember right, Kevin King did and did not play well. Week two against the Detroit Lions is when he got on. Okay. But Rasul Douglas wouldn't be here if not for Jair Alexander having that injury. Because once Jair Alexander went down with that shoulder, they had to find someone else, and they won the lottery with Russell. But you know, he's going to have to earn everything he gets, because the thing that's lost in last season, like, he had that awful injury that put him in a wheelchair. Like, I've never seen that, a guy in the locker room in a wheelchair. He was in a wheelchair through the end of last season, and then he had crutches. I mean, it was a very long process, because it was the Lisfranc and the meniscus. The meniscus on its own would have been 4 to 8 weeks. Maybe he's back in six. Gives him a chance to return by the end of the season. But he said as soon as he found out that he had the Lisfranc injury, he knew his season was over. He wasn't going anywhere for the rest of the year. So not only did he have that, but before then, he didn't play well at all. He really, you see this from time to time with guys that have good rookie years, regress in their second season, but he hit that sophomore slump, and I asked him, you know, especially having the downtime of the injury, what was that like watching the film? He's like, oh, I hated watching that film. It was terrible. But he forced himself to, and I asked what he learned about it. He said, you know, it's the old former DB's coach, Jerry Gray, who's now in Atlanta, told him, as a corner, you've always got to have your gun ready. You've always got to be ready to go every snap. And he wasn't last year. So he's going to have to not only overcome the injury, he's going to have to overcome not playing well through the first half of last season. And now he's going to have to earn everything he gets. And the two guys that are missing voluntary OTAs because they can, because they don't need to be there, because that's how secured they are, just happen to be in his position. So the thing to keep an eye on is going to be Keyshawn Nixon. How does he play in slot? Because if he struggles in slot, and he's a player now, I think that he's going to take that position and be just fine. But if he does struggle in slot, then there might be more room for Eric Stokes on the perimeter, because you have to drop probably not Rasul Douglas, maybe more Jair Alexander in the slot.
Yeah. What is it that Rich Bisaccia has said about Keyshawn Nixon? He's got a little dirt on the back of his neck. That's what you need to play nickel.
And, you know, they're not in pads. They're not in pads, but watching Keyshawn Nixon, the way he competes every snap, you can see why the Packers like him there. I mean, the guy competes.
That first week, he was everywhere. Literally, during team snaps, it felt like he was everywhere the ball was, every play. It was insane.
He plays corner the way he returns kickoffs. It's full throttle every single rep, every single chance. So he's earned that spot. It's not a coincidence. I mean, he's put himself in that position. So that's what Eric Stokes is up against. Mm-hmm. He's up against two of the top talents on their defense, and Rasul Douglas and Jair Alexander, and then a young Keyshawn Nixon, who is finally getting that chance the way he did as a return specialist last year. You saw what he did when he got that chance last year. Now he's getting his chance, and he's going to fight and claw to maximize everything he can get out of this. That's what Eric Stokes is up against.
Before we get to safeties, because I want to get on those, you mentioned Keyshawn Nixon as a returner. So this is a good little aside. He's got that kick returner position locked up. I thought it was hilarious last week when he was asked about, like, being all pro on kick returner with 8 games. What could he do with a full season? And he was like, I can't even think about that anymore. He was like, because that was only 8 games. And he was like, was I the best? Yeah. And it was like, yeah, you were. You were statistically the best in the NFL, even with only eight games. Exactly. Yeah. He's like, so was I the best? Yeah, but it wasn't my best. And he said, now I'm going for all pro on defense. And you know what, Ryan? At this point, anything Keyshawn Nixon says he's going for, I'm going to believe him until he proves me wrong.
Well, every chance we've seen, we've gotten to see him play defense, he's played well. Think about week 3 last year in Tampa. He played awfully well then. He had the game-sealing interception in Chicago against Justin Fields. Like, he didn't get a – he got, what, 300 snaps on defense last year? But he played well every time we got to see him. So, now how does that – you know, once that goes from 300 to 800, how does that hold up? That's a question, because we haven't seen that yet. But, yeah, I mean, as far as the return specialist goes, they're going to give Jaden Reed – a chance to win punt return. He did a lot of that in college. And if he wins it, if he goes out and he's a solid, you know, dynamic punt returner, fine. Because that's, you know, taking a little bit off Keyshawn Nixon's plate as his snaps might be going from 300 to 800 on defense. That makes sense. But if he doesn't, Keyshawn Nixon was this side of Christian Watson the best weapon they had last year with the ball in his hands. And if you know, we'll see what Jaden Reed as a rookie does as a punt returner. But if he struggles, go give Keyshawn Nixon that punt return job, even if it's unorthodox. And you know, even if it makes Matt LaFleur want to pull his hair out sometimes, because he is just that dynamic.
Yeah. You know what's funny is we talk about like, oh, well, Keyshawn Nixon is their kick returner, but he doesn't have to be their punt returner, because that is a completely different position. It just is. Keyshawn Nixon will tell you, like, you know, yeah, that may be, we're going to give Jaden more snaps there. Everyone is in acknowledgement that Keyshawn Nixon doesn't have to be the punt returner because he's better at kick return. He was still one or two in every punt return category as well in the NFL. And so this is what, this is what they're dealing with here. Keyshawn Nixon is okay letting Jaden Reed take over punt returns, just from the conversation I had with him last week, but he's going to make sure he's earned it. He said he told Jaden Reed the first day he walked in the locker room, you're going to work at punt return, but I'm going to stay on your ass the whole time. And so he's making sure he earns it. Then we also see Romeo Doubs there as well, working through OTAs. So they've got options, which is more than they had at this time a year ago. And that's crucial. Let's go to safety real quick before we wrap up. Darnell Savage is getting a chance to get his job back. We saw him bounce back after his benching last year. He had that interception return for a touchdown versus the Minnesota Vikings. Granted, during that game, you or not, I probably could have had an interception. Everybody was feasting during that New Year's Day game against the Vikings. That being said, Darnell Savage is having to come back from a lot. Again, I know it's only been two OTAs that we've seen. They're in T-shirts. Do you see more of the Darnell Savage of old, though?
We won't see that for a while, but you're right. He's coming back from a lot. He was the most disappointing player on the defense last year. And just like I said with A.J. Dillon, and A.J. Dillon had a far superior season last year than Darnell Savage, but the same thing, it's because Darnell Savage is capable of so much more. He's the fastest player on that defense. You saw it on that interception return for a touchdown. He was gone. The way his speed gives him the range to do so many things on the back end of that defense that he just didn't do. And the Packers have got to get the best out of Darnell Savage. He's in such an interesting position because there's no more Adrian Amos now. He is the leader again, by de facto. I mean, by default, he is the leader at safety. He's also the guy that's trying to overcome the most in terms of underperformance last year. So he's got to balance those two things. But, you know, I talked to him a lot after the first open OTA session. I thought it was really interesting, too, because Darnell Savage knew the questions coming his way. And after the first OTA session, everyone is talking to Jordan Love. And there's not a lot of guys in that locker room. Darnell Savage waited. He sat at his locker. He knew that the reporters were going to find him. He knew the questions that were coming. He also knows that he's the leader of the safety position. And he knows that among the many things that Adrian Amos did the last few years, there was a reason he wore the C on his chest, because he was always accountable. He was always available, always accountable. And he got to watch that from Adrian Amos. And Darnell Savage has taken this leadership role very seriously. That's the kind of what stood out to me. He's got to perform on the field, because he's got every piece of talent that you need to be able to perform on the field. It's not like the guy's untalented. If it was that, then okay, you might be in trouble. He's got it there. He just has to put it together. And he's had moments in the NFL where he's been able to do that. A few years ago, you know, he came in playing 800 snaps as a rookie for a reason. And he's, you know, he's been a top every year. He's been at the top of the leaderboard in terms of snaps on that defensive side. He's played a ton for a reason. He's got the talent. You can't have the 10 missed tackles that he had last year and 68 chances. He can't be blowing coverages in zone and giving up wide open touchdowns. He's got to stay true to his assignment. He can't go hunting and chasing plays when all that's required from a safety especially is do your assignment, because if you don't, there's nobody else behind you. You are the last line of defense. So if he can can take care of those things, the talent is there. It's just a matter of putting it together.
All of that, with all of that in mind, what you said about can't have the 10 missed tackles in a game, you are the last line of defense. I don't think it's a coincidence that the Packers signed Jonathan Owens as a free agent this offseason. They also brought in Tavarius Moore from the San Francisco 49ers, very solid veteran safety. Jonathan Owens, as we said in our last podcast, the caveat to being the second leading safety tackler in the NFL is that he was playing behind the league's worst rushing defense. The leading safety tackler in the NFL was his teammate on the Houston Texans. That's not a coincidence. That being said, even when you're playing behind such a bad rushing defense and the tackles are coming to you, you have to make the tackles. That was an issue with the Packers last season, you know, versus the Eagles, I believe it was. They had like 22 missed tackles or something as a team. It was an issue that they were all admitted to. Do you think just having maybe Jonathan Owens in the room on the field just to kind of, I guess, indicate or what it means to be a solid tackler can help Darnell Savage?
Well, I don't know what kind of tackler Jonathan Owens is yet. I didn't get to watch him a lot. And tackle's one of those stats where, I mean, if you knock a guy back on his ass at the line of scrimmage or you have him drag you 5 yards downfield, it's counted a tackle the same way, even though on the film it is not the same play.
That should be a breakdown on the stat sheet, though. You're right.
Exactly. What kind of tackle is it? Because all tackles are not the same.
Right.
So he had a lot of tackles, and I'm not saying it was one or the other. I don't know. But what the Packers did at safety this year, they knew Darnell Savage was coming back. They also saw Adrian Amos regress last year. He was not the same player. He's on the wrong side of 30, and it's time to get younger at that position next to Darnell Savage. They knew this safety class was not where you go find a starting safety. Not with these safeties coming in. It was a very weak, thin class. They drafted Anthony Johnson Jr. in the 7th round, but a 7th round pick is a rookie special teamer. I mean, that's your role. So they went out and they got Tavarius Moore. They got Jonathan Owens. They have Rudy Ford as the in-house kind of incumbent candidate. And one of those three will be your starting safety. We'll just have to see how that plays out.
You know, could we also see like a – this may be a naive question because this may be more of a college thing. Could we see a 2x2 rotation?
No, not at that position. I mean – based on matchups, like if they feel like Jonathan Owens and Tarvarius Moore are very different in skill set, let's say this is totally hypothetical, but say one is a coverage safety and the other is a thumper, and they know that Darnell Savage is their best guy, then based on the matchup from week to week, maybe you can see some rotation there. But especially in the secondary, it's kind of like offensive line. Those guys don't leave the field. Your best 4 or 5 in the secondary are staying every snap. So I think ultimately what they'd like to see happen is Darnell Savage become the Darnell Savage they feel like he can be and have another starter emerge head and shoulders above the field to match Darnell Savage and just have your two anchors on the back end. And you never got to take them off the field. That would be the preferable outcome. But short of that, yeah, could there be some rotation? Maybe, but that'd be a fallback. That would be a secondary plan. And the secondary, you like that wordplay? Hey,
that was nice. That was a good pun.
Totally unintentional.
To your point about could one be a cover safety? Could one be a thumper? This is an observation from OTAs. Here you go. Something that shocked me because I had only seen him in pictures was how slight Jonathan Owens is. And then I realized it's because in the pictures, he's standing next to Simone Biles, who is a little bitty person. And so, of course, he was going to look huge. But he may have been my height, Ryan.
And the other thing, too, is these guys just – unless you're A.J. Dillon. A.J. Dillon is the exception. But these guys just look different when they put the pads on. They go from – being really big humans to being like gladiators when you put the pads on. You know what? Not just A.J. Dillon. Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft are big dudes too. Their size. Lucas Van Ness is a big guy. They've got some impressive athletes out there for sure. But when, you know, just wait until you see those rookies in pads. they will metamorphosize overnight. It's something.
I meant to say this earlier when you were talking about Darnell Savage. My gripe with Darnell Savage right now is that this week I asked the guys what their favorite Taylor Swift song is, since she's starting her Midwest shows this weekend. And Darnell Savage got her confused with Adele. The nerve.
I could see it.
Don't agree with him. Don't agree. Don't sit here and agree
with
him.
I got you, Darnell. I can see it. I can see it.
I was offended on her behalf.
Oh, I couldn't give you my favorite Taylor Swift song. I because I'd have to know a song to be able to give you.
And I do love Adele. Those are just two completely different people. Ennis Gaines sang me a whole line from a song. It was beautiful. You'll have to.
Did he really?
He did.
How was the singing voice?
It wasn't bad. It really wasn't bad.
Could he go on Masked Singer?
You know, I could see that.
You don't have to be on that. There's a thought.
TJ Slayton took a left turn and said, "I like Miley Cyrus," and then sang a whole line from Flowers. That I can buy myself flowers. You heard that song? It's good.
No,
well, TJ Slayton is going to sing it for you on this video. Anyways, we got distracted. I guess the only other big position of note, punter stayed the same, is Anders Carlson being in there at kicker now instead of Mason Crosby. But again, I don't think we've seen him a ton. They haven't really kicked field goals in the team.
Never kicked. Yeah.
Yeah.
Riz Bisaccia is holding true to his state secrets. We are not going to see Anders Carlson kick until he is good and ready. When that'll be, I don't know.
Who knows? Something else of note that we found out this week, there will be two joint practices for the Packers this year. We already knew the Patriots were going to be coming to town before that week two preseason game. We now know they will also be having a joint practice with the Cincinnati Bengals when they travel to Cincinnati for that preseason game, but just one. And Ryan, Bengals head coach Zach Taylor was asked about, are you worried about doing another joint practice after the helmet swinging incident that the Bengals had last year during a joint practice? And he said, yes, that's why we're only doing one or one day instead of a full week like most teams do. Is it beneficial to do a joint practice with a second team, or does it all come out in the wash? Does it not make a difference?
This year it is. It's a little bit of a different year here for the Packers. The joint practices, look, preseason games are irrelevant. I mean, you want to see maybe how young guys show up in the lights and can they make plays against live tackling. But from a schematic standpoint, it's all moot because it's completely vanilla. There's no intricacies whatsoever on either side of the line of scrimmage. It is line up, make a play, beat the guy across from you. There's no scheme there. Joint practices, they put in scheme. So Bill Belichick is going to be putting in his scheme for Jordan Love. Defensive side, Joe Burrow is going to be running his stuff against his Packers secondary. So the joint practices carry a lot more value in terms of what they can actually get done from a workload standpoint when it comes to scheme. Having a first-time starting quarterback, you want to get as much preparation as possible. So I can see it. The fascinating part of that, Cassidy, is obviously they're taking training camp out of Green Bay for the first time in eons. I was talking with Pete Doherty, our resident Packers historian on staff, and he's like, well, I think they did it in the 40s and 50s. But, you know, Pete and Spoon have been on staff for three decades. They haven't done it. They haven't taken training camp out of Green Bay in their time. It's been a very long time since this has happened. The reason why they haven't done this is because of the economic impact that it gives the area. Now, it probably helps from an economic impact standpoint, knowing that the NFL draft is coming to Green Bay in 2 years. Yeah. So there's going to be a huge, huge economic boom coming to this area. But that's different. It's going to be very different to see a training camp practice outside Green Bay.
And teams like to come here because of the weather during August.
But Cincinnati's the same way, you know. I don't think they're going down to Houston.
Right. I just said Cincinnati's on the Great Lakes, and they're absolutely not. Apologies for that. If you're
they're close enough, geography. Cleveland, who needs geography in a football show?
They are on the river. They're on the river, so it's nice.
They are. The Ohio River.
Do you think they'll take the bikes to Cincinnati?
Oh, that's a great question. I haven't thought of that.
Like, do you think Packers fans will show up with bikes?
You know, one of the coolest things, honestly, over the last, you know, 4 years since, you know, the Texans and the Jets, and gosh, who else is the Saints, when they've come to joint practices, is seeing their players ride the bikes and how excited they get in on it. I mean, it's a great Packers training camp tradition. Obviously, everyone knows that here. But the opposing players really get in on that. I wonder, I don't know what I don't know if the Bengals have anything cool like that they do, but I wonder if the Packers players would probably partake in whatever the Bengals do.
You know, and I'm trying to think, and your knowledge of the NFL would be greater than mine, but the Packers bikes are the only training camp tradition in the entire NFL that I can think of.
Me too. I don't know. You know, if there's anything, I'm sure there's other teams that do something. Right. I don't know what it is.
But nothing that's that iconic. Because even before I came here, before I had any inkling of the Packers as a job, just knowing the NFL, I knew about the bikes.
Lambeau Leaps here. It's not just Lambeau Field. The bike ride is pretty iconic as well. That's a good word. It's an iconic tradition.
Yeah, it is. Okay, Ryan. I'm going to give you your final spoons night here with us, so you'll get 60 seconds today. Ready?
Oh, boy. Put me on the spot. I would just like to thank you, Cassidy, for getting through this entire podcast without any Ted Lasso spoilers, because I am dying to watch it. I haven't been able to watch it yet. That would be
rectified. I texted Ryan yesterday, and I said, before we get on this podcast and I spoil anything, have you watched the finale?
And I have not. I'm not yet. I'm going to take care of that very, very soon. Needs to get taken care of. But I guess in my 60 seconds, don't give spoilers, but what were your universal overall thoughts on how this series ended?
What's a good word? Okay, I don't think I can narrow it down to one word. But I would say it concluded, everything got a bow put on it. And even the things that didn't get a bow put on it, it was concluded in such a way where you could feel comfortable saying, that's life. And I know there were a lot of people on social media, especially on Twitter, who were upset with some things. But I feel like it's because there was a subsection of the fans who went off on their own little fanfic, they wanted things from the show that were never going to happen, but they talked themselves into them happening because they started writing fanfics. It, to me, everyone ended up where they were supposed, everyone is doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I think it's interesting, they left the door open for more. Like, this is not, this was never, even though we were told from the beginning it was going to be 3 seasons, and even though this felt like a conclusion, it was never called a series finale by Apple or any of the cast. And I liked that the door was open, but again, that could also just be life. You know, there's always more going on with someone even when we're not in their life anymore. I thought it was a very fitting end for the show and for every character in it.
And well, that makes me happy to hear, because I, for one, am not happy that it's only 3 seasons. I could have right. Just saying. Apple.
Yeah. So I don't want to say anything and give anything away.
This is so much fun for me. I am so impressed with how well you're doing.
I have
any secrets.
Anyone who knows me knows I have a really bad habit of spoiling things. TV shows.
Oh, boy.
I have a bad habit of spoiling
them. I'm playing with fire here.
Everything in that I can right now. But there is one part in particular that as soon as it came up, I went, that's the door. That's the door they just kept open.
Ooh.
More.
All right. So on the next podcast, we're going to go over this. We're going to talk about it.
I know. We need to make sure Spoon has watched the finale by next podcast, too, in case he's on it with us.
Is Spoon into the show too? I sure hope he is.
Very much so.
Yeah. Good. Very good Spoon. So. Good.
Ooh, okay, go watch it this weekend. You go watch it. I'm going to Taylor Swift. We will come back and talk about the Packers next week. but we will also talk about Ted Lasso.
Have fun with Taylor Swift. That'll be great.
I will. It's going to be a lot of fun. Well, Ryan, thank you as always. You have your homework for the weekend. Look forward to seeing you again in a week or so here. We've got a little bit of a break between OTAs and minicamp, I believe. But we do have one more week of OTAs. We will have you full coverage for that on PackersNews.com. We'll continue to have coverage for you from the first 2 weeks of OTAs as well. So make sure you check PackersNews.com for that coverage. Ryan, thank you as always. This has been the Green 19 podcast from JS Online at PackersNews.com.